Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's January 26, 2018 program. What's next for the Oregon Health Plan? This is the 18th program in our 2017-2018 programming year. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club President. The results are now in from the special election. Measure 101 passed with over 60% support. This will help prevent thousands of Oregonians, including children, from losing their health care coverage. How this affects the Oregon Health Plan and when the Oregon Legislature will have to revisit the funding issue for health care and adequate insurance coverage are all issues that we hope our speaker today, Ryan Kanowski, will be addressing. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play. We're a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy. Become a member of City Club at cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Gatos, Churnside, and Balthrop PC, Attorneys at Law, Hearing Associates, the Housing and Community Services Agency, Hacksaw of Lane County, Jerry Diethelm, Architect, Landscape Architect, and special thanks to PacInfo and Simplified Computing LLC, and to KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 at 6:30 on Monday following the Friday program. I'm the coordinator of today's program, so I'd like to go ahead and introduce our speaker. Ryan Kanowski is a former Oregon Legislative Staff Assistant to Representative Phil Barnhart. Ryan is one of the, was in that position, one of the important people in the state capitol. You may not always get in to see the legislator directly, and a lot of times you're gonna be much more effective if you go to the staff. And when Ryan was on staff up there, it became apparent very quickly that he was one of the quick studies, and he was diligent and very much helped to run that very busy office where the legislator was chair of the Revenue Committee. So it's really good that we have Ryan with us today. Ryan's been a very active community organizer. He's worked on political candidate campaigns as well as issue campaigns such as the Measure for 101 campaign. He assisted a little bit on that, and also things like the local water measures. He helped on one of those in Creswell. He's an advocate for adequate health care, especially for young adults. So Ryan, thank you.
Hi, oh, see if we can hear me. Hi, can everyone hear me good? All right, fantastic. So my name is Ryan Kanowski, a local kid, a little bit about me. I grew up in Creswell. I went to University of Oregon where I studied political science. So I've spent my life here in Lane County and grew up in an activist culture here. I think that's something that Lane County can definitely boast is people being active in their communities. It's kind of drove me to be involved in politics and be involved for advocating, especially in a growing population. I'm a younger adult, and so there's a lot of issues that people my age are going to be facing in the near future, and a lot of young people are very engaged and very active in what's going on in our futures. So Measure 101 really got me excited and involved because I just turned 27, which means that I fell into that fantastic category of young adults who no longer could be on their parents' insurance. They have to go find insurance elsewhere, and like a lot of young adults, I work full time, but it's not the best and brightest shiny job. So I was forced to find health insurance, healthcare coverage through the Affordable Care Act. And so as a young person, I've definitely been thrust right into that of finding healthcare and realizing that it's incredibly important for a lot of people. I'm very, very thankful that I've been healthy in my life, but one bad accident, one bad mistake, and it could be very detrimental to me. So I knew right away that healthcare was something that I needed to get signed up for, and I was thankful that it was there and available for me to have, and for a lot of other people too, which is a lot of the reason why Measure 101 was so important. So just to kind of revisit that so we can talk about the big issues, which is that there is a growing missing middle in healthcare coverage for a lot of people. And that's the biggest point of what we were talking about. Working families, folks that are working full-time, but probably don't have healthcare through their work, and so they have to find it elsewhere. Their families with kids, they're doing the right thing, and just don't have the right opportunities for healthcare. And in Oregon, we said that we want to value that healthcare. We want to show that even if you don't have access through your work, that we need to be the support that backs that up. So what we did was provide that missing middle, so those families that are working full time. And what it's done is help really things around the state help improve access to healthcare for a lot of people. ER visits have been dropped by 23%. So a lot of those folks that were relying on emergency services can now go see a full-time doctor. That helps relieve pressures on the staff working in emergency rooms, and it helps let them treat people that are really in dire emergency situations, which I think is fantastic. It helps all of us. Another thing that is doing is we're helping save the federal government a whole lot of money by investing in insurance. We're saving, even with the federal matching program, we're saving the federal government about $1.9 billion, which is a really big step that we're providing health care and saving money. That's not a thing a lot of commitments to social services can provide. So that is really fantastic. And another reason we're talking about this is because Oregon has been really good in economic. We were deemed an economically productive state. So what that means is we are so good at employing people that the federal government put us in a category that says that they're not going to provide the same supply of money to help pay for insurance because we're keeping people employed. We're doing a good job. So we're suffering from our own good deeds, what we're doing. So really what we've done is on Tuesday we showed that complicated, messy insurance is still important. It's still something that overwhelmingly we value because we know that around the country people are going bankrupt and people are making very difficult choices with their families, providing food or going to a doctor or being able to pay rent or going to see a dentist, things like that. We're stepping up in those situations where a lot of the country is falling behind. So the big question is that now that Measure 101 has passed, it's going to stay into law. That's the big thing to know, is that this was law in June when it passed, and it's still law today. So no big major changes. It's going to continue business as usual, and we're not going to be asking our state legislature in a couple weeks to make some tough decisions that they get to address other businesses of the state. So that's the immediate first step, is we've passed this, and so now what's next? Now that's the big thing we need to talk about. One of the things about Measure 101 and about the funding that we did was it was a two-year program. So one of the major reasons that it was a two-year program, actually two major reasons. One is that the federal government seems to be kind of turbulent in what they're going to be doing with healthcare, to say. From both sides, really. There is a big push from the majority that is in the federal government to at least repeal. There's been some conversation of replace, but an overwhelming effort to try to repeal in any way they can. On the left side, there has been a major push for healthcare for all, or some way of that, of providing universal access to healthcare for everybody. So it seems like this is an issue that will not go away. And who knows what it's going to be like in a year, in 2 years. And so this two-year program allows our state to act on what we know today, that we will be getting federal funds, at least for the next year, or by June of 2019, we will still be getting access to those funds to provide health care. We'll still be getting involved in part of the programs because they're not going to do something tomorrow to change healthcare. So that gives us an opportunity to re-look at the situation here in 2 years. Maybe we won't have to have healthcare provided because we'll have universal access. Maybe we're going to have to find ways to invest more because federal funds are going to be cut. I don't envy our state legislators in this upcoming decisions because, as infamously quoted, who knew healthcare could be so hard? So that's one of the big things, is that we have to see what the federal government's going to do, see how elections are going to change conversations. It's going to be involved in, I'd imagine, pretty much every decision on every elected level is how are we going to address healthcare needs, anywhere from our city, our county commissioners, our state level, and our federal delegation. We're going to have to be having these tough conversations with everybody, and we're going to have a chance to cast our votes for which way we would like to see the going forward. Another big reason that we have the two-year funding is because in 2 years, or by the end of the 2019 legislative session, we're going to have to find a little bit more. Part of the Affordable Care Act was that states could buy into the program. The federal government covered 100% of the costs for the expansion population in every year. We're asked to pay a little bit more. So they covered the upfront, and now we're gonna be asked to pay just a little bit more at the end of the 2019 session. So that gives them an opportunity to find more long-term and stable funding solutions. We all know that this is an imperfect system. It's a system that is new. It's a new in American systems, and so it's going to be something we're all going to have to work through together and get community buy-in, which one way or the other. So that's another task of our legislature, is to figure out that extra gap, avoid hopefully another special election, and find something that all of our communities can buy into. So this is a great chance to talk to your legislators and let them know one way or the other how you feel about healthcare, because this is not gonna go away anytime soon. It would be wonderful if we could find a nice glowing plan that works perfectly and nobody's upset and everybody's happy, but we wouldn't have much government if that happened. So, so one of the next big steps is trying to talk about what our legislators gonna do. Representative Mitch Greenlick has been leading healthcare conversations all across the state for many years, and he is not backing down. So a first big thing he did was he convened the Universal Access to Healthcare Work Group. That is a work group that's There's a bipartisan work group that their goal is to look at healthcare and find a roadmap to the future of what we're gonna do. So take the time, don't just do it in 6 months of their long session, but take from now until next year to find a good plan, have conversations across the state, talk to shareholders, talk to interest groups, and really take the time and effort to make this right, which is really important. Healthcare is incredibly complex. It's something that changes. Relationships between federal and state change constantly. So looking at these systems and how they play out really in depth, taking the time that's not busy with campaigns, not busy with other legislative work, is going to be a benefit for all, because we're going to have the real details we need to move forward in a way that's going to be fair to all, or as many as possible, and effective in a way of providing health care for as many people as possible. And working towards the goal of 100% coverage of all people here in Oregon. We're at 95% right now, 100% of kids, and that's pretty darn good. But there's still 5% that need us to help them along in that path. So that is one of the goals of the work group. New Representative Andrea Salinas will be chairing that work group, and also one of my good friends here, Charlie Swanson, and he will be here to help answer some questions later on. He is a community advocate member of the work group, so he is one of our local folks, so if you had any questions outside as well, you could help ask some questions of him. So that is one of the big work groups, and also Senator James Manning is going to be helping out with that. He is the Senate side is not involved in this work group. It's a House work group, but a few senators are paying attention. So Senator Dembro and Senator Manning are kind of keeping an eye and are being liaisons to the Senate so that it's bicameral legislation that everyone can get on board with, and everyone can kind of dig into the facts of what's going on. Another big task of Representative Greenlich is to work on coordinated care organization reform and updates. That's another big, the coordinated care organizations are a big part and partner of the Oregon Health Plan. They address about 25% of all healthcare needs for people in the state, so very large partners. They were created in 2011 as a way of facilitating healthcare needs throughout the state. And it's a brand new program, like a lot of our healthcare programs. And so they too need to kind of keep working through the flaws and try to find ways to enhance the healthcare they're providing to people who really need it the most. So one of the big things they're looking at is trying to help create transparency, create accountability, hold them accountable like all kind of federal government programs. So having open meeting laws and things like that to where we know where the state money is going and how it's being spent and make sure it's being put towards providing the best health care we can provide to a lot of people. So that is a very big task. Representative Greenlich has done this a few years in a row now, and the CCOs are just nearing the end of their five-year contract. So now is the logical time to start looking at these programs and say, how can we really improve this and make it so we all work together in an effective way? They're going to take recommendations from the Oregon Health Policy Board. It's a board that is, is advising on ways that we can improve access to healthcare for people. And so that is what they'll be working on. They're extending the program for a year. Their contract, they extended it just for one more year because they're going to be really taking a hard look at this in this 2018 session and seeing how we're going to make improvements for the upcoming contract and make sure we're doing things right for Oregonians. One of the last big things that Representative Greenlich and healthcare is working on putting on the ballot an initiative that is an amendment to our Constitution, and it says it's called the HOPE Amendment. And what they're looking for is trying to let Oregonians weigh in and say if we would like to put officially on paper that healthcare needs to be something that is critical and is something that the legislature needs to be providing for people. This is one step towards healthcare for all and universal healthcare. And letting Oregonians finally say yay or nay to this will help further conversations in a very long way. That's an effort that Representative Greenlich hopes to have on the November ballot this year, and if not in 2018, then possibly in 2020. So a few big things coming all down the pipeline for healthcare. And this is a long-term process. This is a process that is gonna take a lot of community buy-in. There's a lot of stories around of individuals having a problem with the healthcare insurance or problem with provider, and making sure that we all talk and tell our stories helps us make better for all, because your story might be something that is going to benefit another person in the future. So it's going to take our community, it's going to take involvement from a lot of different people and a lot of different organizations to make it right and make sure that we start taking back on people going bankrupt from healthcare, from having a major illness in their family, that they don't have to make those tough decisions about if they're going to be providing healthcare or going out and making sure their family has dinner, which is something I think we all can agree on, that we want our families to be healthy and happy and prosperous. So I think that's about my time, and I'm looking forward to answering all your questions.
Thank you. So we'll take a 5-minute break, and we don't have a first questioner today, so we have plenty of time for member questions. So we'll take about a 5-minute break, and then we will take questions with Ryan. And I also want to introduce Charlie Swanson. Charlie, if you could stand up. Charlie is an advocate member, as Ryan said, of the House Work Group on universal access to healthcare. So Charlie's here to help answer some of the more technical questions. So thank you, and we'll be back in 5 minutes.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the January 26, 2018 City Club program, What's Next for Oregon Health Plan. This is Sandra Bishop, City Club President. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Gatos, Churnside and Balthrop, Attorneys at Law, Hearing Associates, Hacksaw, the Housing and Community Services Agency of Lane County, and Jerry Detelm, architect, landscape architect. And special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon Academic Extension, Dot Dotson's Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio. Before we go to member questions, please remember to keep your questions short and to the point, but actually today we have plenty of time for questions, so you have some time. And I'd like to reintroduce Charlie Swanson. He's an advocate member of the House Work Group on Universal Access to Healthcare, and he's a retired physicist. He's gonna help to answer any of the technical questions. And so now we'll go to questions, thank you.
I'm Dina Wills, a City Club member since 2008, I think. This question I'm asking for some people at our table, one of whom knew that the median income in Oregon is $63,000, which means a lot of people are way below $63,000. And those are the people this question's about. Does the federal matching program take into account housing costs and people who are unemployed or underemployed or who have dropped out and aren't even looking for employment anymore?
This is Charlie Swanson.
So the quick answer is no. The federal government's Medicaid rules are based only upon income, and they don't take into account costs, the living costs in various states. So Oregon, with the CCO model, part of what it's supposed to do, and it's barely beginning to do it, is address some of the social determinants of health. So some of the CCOs have started looking more into housing costs and trying to address that issue in some manner, but it's a very small piece at this point. The likelihood is it will expand, but the likelihood is it never can, there will not ever be enough money within the Medicaid program in Oregon to expand sufficiently to address that problem.
Thank you. Ryan, did you want to add anything to that?
And I just want to talk about too that the median income is about 68,000, I think you said. Just want to address that. So federal poverty level is about $34,000 a year for a family of four. We're starting to look at widening gaps in those areas, and so this is going to be a problem that, as income disparities continue to rise, that it's going to be a constantly addressed issue that they're going to have to start looking at.
Thank you. Go ahead, John.
I'm John Anik, a City Club member since 2003, and my question is regarding models to be followed. I've personally experienced medical care, hospital stay and surgery in Scotland and in Canada, and I've never saw a bill. And I wondered to what extent the state of Oregon and perhaps the federal government are looking at other countries to see them as examples of what can be done to deal with the cost of medical care. They handle it differently on other sides of our border.
Absolutely, yeah. So one of the big things is that, and a lot of the conversations I've seen lately, we take a look at Norway, we take a look at Canada, and we see that there are models all across the globe that have these very positive health care benefits for their citizens. And like you said, a lot of them don't ever see a bill. Most countries, most people will never see bankruptcy because of a health care crisis and things like that as well. So a lot of the federal models, Oregon can do so much. We can do a bit, but really partnering with federal government is big. They do look at plans across the world because they want to see what works, what doesn't, what is going to work for a country of our size with a population and with such a divide between rural and urban areas as well. So finding models that fit, that moving forward, and it's going to really depend too which path we go forward. Is it going to be the path towards universal health care and we'll look at countries like that, or if it's going to be more repeal and let free market handle it, that's going to be a whole different path. So as far as I know, folks that are looking towards universal health care and health care for all are looking at every model they can, and it helps show evidence that what we do is going to be positive, what we do is going to work, and what we do is not going to bankrupt our country and bankrupt people around the world. So their efforts, I've had conversations with multiple legislators that have said that, what about, you know, this country does this thing really well, why don't we do that, and this country does that, and it would be wise for us to look at everything and lump it all into one and say, what is going to be the best path forward? Let's not recreate the wheel, let's do it the best way we can do. And I think Charlie had a little thing to add.
Okay. So as Ryan said, those in the federal government who are actually advocating for universal care, those who are currently supporting, for example, H.R. 676, or I forget what Sanders' bill that got 17 senators to sign on, they have been looking at what other countries do. Those that are advocating repeal of the ACA are not. At the state level, the work group that I am on, the Universal Access to Care, which actually just has had one meeting so far, and it has a way more to do than we can ever possibly do. There's going to be no way we can actually accomplish all the things we need to accomplish. But one of the things we will definitely be looking at is what other countries do, at least to some extent, depending on how far along we get. So.
Thank you.
My question, I have a lot of questions about the CCOs, and I'm Dr. Henry Elder. I'm a City Club member for 2 years. and I'm grappling with Trillium right now, our local CCO, because they are currently allowing the contracts to be unsigned for 6,000 members of Lane County's people who are in need of health care, Oregon Health Plan members. My question is, what can we do to be better in control of our CCOs? How can we oversee them? Do we have local oversight of those CCOs in any way? I know they're state arranged organizations. But what can be done to be in control locally?
This is Ryan Kanowski. So locally, or what can be done? I addressed this a little bit, but really looking at reforms in a way that's going to increase public transparency and public accountability. So making sure that these meetings are open to the public, we know exactly what's being discussed, plans moving forward, especially plans to reimburse our doctors and make sure that we're providing coverage to. Make sure we're providing the adequate coverage we need and make sure contracts are being fulfilled. Right now, a lot of this is done in closed doors, and so we get the end product. We don't get how they get to these thought processes. They don't get to know how these things are done. There's a lot of really positive CCOs around the state that are a lot better at providing coverage, better at fulfilling their contracts. And so looking at what the good actors are doing and trying to replicate that in state law with this big push to reform with new contracts coming up. That will be huge. Obviously, it's a brand new program, so there was some oversight and some errors, and I wasn't in the conversations with the legislators at the time, but I know that there's always improvements that can be made and work to be done. And I think providing that allowing people to know what's going on behind the doors is going to be a gigantic first step to putting public pressure on being good actors in the communities.
This is Charlie Swanson. So there are actually a number of things that can be done, and Ryan mentioned the notion of reforming the process, or reforming the governance of CCOs, which is what Greenlink's bill is trying to do, and also what the Oregon Health Policy Board recommendations try to do. Some of that might need legislative action, which is the things that Greenlink's bill is trying to do. Some might need to be put into the contracts, so the RFPs, the request for proposals, that will be put out sometime this year. It's will probably be good to have community oversight of that process, and also community oversight of the process of the contracting itself once those proposals are in. Another place where these things might be able to be addressed is every CCO has a community advisory council, and so there might be issues that can be brought up there. Right now, though, the governance of the CCOs can happen behind closed doors, and Trillium has chosen that to do that. The measurements that are required by the state, the metrics that are being fulfilled, would suggest that Trillium is about as good as any of the other CCOs in meeting the requirements the state has put on them. So part of the problem might be defining those requirements that the state has put on them. Part of the issue is that I actually think that part of the issue is related to the leadership within the Oregon Health Authority, which has changed recently due to some difficulties and problems. I think the new OHA director will improve some things, so I think we might see fewer problems than we did in the past, but it's going to be a difficult task to try to make sure that OHAs fulfill their promise of being a community-controlled organization. And that may not be a task that can be fulfilled with what might come out of the legislature. So I would, if you're concerned about that, I think it's useful to get involved with the notions of what should be done, what can be done to correct those, what I think are actually governance problems.
Doctor, did you need a clarification for anything on the question or anything? Thank you so much. Good question.
I'm Jack Dresser. I wanted to follow up on John Adick's question. Last time I looked, the World Health Organization rated the United States number 37 in health efficiency, health outcomes, despite our affluence as a country. And as alluded to earlier, there's plenty of models out there of publicly administered, publicly provided, publicly regulated healthcare systems that on average cost per capita half of what ours does and provide universal coverage. So that's the most obvious commonsensical thing. I know Charlie has been working hard on the healthcare for all Oregonians, which is looking at these models. Now, of course, this is going to run into the sacred free market. And so I wonder if you guys could talk about the propaganda themes that are used and will be used increasingly by the healthcare insurance industry, privately administered, and the pharmaceutical industry, and how these propaganda themes can be countered.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I'm Ryan Kanowski again. So I think a lot of this is going to come down to conversations we have with our neighbors, conversations we have with our family, and trying to build a positive idea about healthcare. Show that it seems to be insane that one of the most prosperous countries in the world allows so many people to go bankrupt because of healthcare needs and healthcare costs. So I think you're absolutely right that there's a lot of muddying the waters in these situations where a lot of confusion. Again, healthcare is incredibly complicated. And people are more adverse to say no when faced with a complex question. So to help fix this, we just need to show that there is a positive path forward, a path forward that helps everybody. One big way you can make your voice heard is by casting votes, by knowing the positions of the elected officials you're voting for, and voting in ways that help promote the way forward that you want to see. So voting for people who support universal access, I'm assuming you do, And so voting in those ways helps boost conversations at in our legislatures and Congress, help push conversations forward. So I think that's the big thing is don't be afraid to have these conversations with people. Folks like to seem to hide behind social media a lot and not have these quality conversations, go sit down and have a coffee or something like that. So sit down with your friends and neighbors, talk to them about why this is important to you, and really have these quality conversations is one way that each of us can make a big difference. Helping advocate, so most of our local electeds are very accessible. You can go up and schedule meetings with them and just personally advocate or join a group organization that is advocating for the health care that you'd like to see the path forward. Join that group, join those conversations, and be involved in your community. That's really the nitty-gritty way we're going to actually get forward and get past a lot of these misinterpretations of how things are going to go and pass forward is just talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends and family.
Yeah, Charlie, if you could address some of the actual themes of what are the opposition points to, we're talking about universal health care for all. What are the points that are being used to argue against that kind of thing?
There's a number of points that come up, and one of the actually, before I go into the points that come up against it, I would say that one of the difficulties is the transition. How do we get from here to there? And people are fearful of change, even if they expect that the change will be for the better. There's only maybe 30% of the people who really have problems with our current healthcare system, so the other 70% it's doing pretty well for them. So that fear of change is going to make it difficult. So one of the things that's going to come up is government can't do things effectively or efficiently. So there's a lot of people that just don't think that government is good at doing anything. Now, I would say they might be correct if we think about our current federal government, they're probably right. So that's part of what Ryan was talking about. For those of you who don't think our current government would be good at and effective at this, we might need to change some of those people before we decide to do something of this nature. And we would have to anyway, because they wouldn't agree to doing this something of this nature. Another is there's a huge belief in the efficiency of the free market, which relates to this, that the free market is always going to do things more efficiently than government will. And the reason that it's bad in the U.S. is not because there's too much free market, it's because there's too little free market. We need to get government out of it completely. And so that's going to be another argument. That would be moving the wrong way if we got government more involved with healthcare. So that's going to be an argument that's going to come up against it. This is currently about 17% of our economy. If we change, and which is way more, as Jack mentioned, it's way more than it is in any other country. The next largest percentage of any world's economy that healthcare involves is about 12%. So the changing that much of our economy is also going to be fearful to people. And they're going to say, well, we can't disrupt almost one-fifth of their whole economy by doing something so drastic. So all of those kinds of arguments will come up. Let me say one more thing about, well, what's one of the ways we can begin to address this? I would say that the HOPE amendment that Ryan mentioned, Representative Greenlick is proposing in the current legislature, which we hope to get on the ballot for 2018, is essentially a statement of principle. One of the fundamental things that a society has to do before we address some of these things is say, it's our principle that everybody needs health care. How many people here think they might get sick someday and need health care? Yeah. So it's everybody is going to need health care at some point in their lives. And so it is sort of silly to not say, to acknowledge that, and to acknowledge that society has an obligation to do something about that. And so the Hope Amendment basically allows Oregonians to say that, yes, it is our obligation to do something about that.
Thank you.
Karen Seidel, City Club member. Actually, your response leads right into my question, because my table was talking about the amendment, and we are assuming that what it says is that the state has an obligation to provide health care for all its residents, and that would provide the legislature a mandate to do something about it.
Yeah.
The state of Oregon already has a mandate to provide education universally. I was at a meeting yesterday in this room with the Vice President for Student Affairs of the University of Oregon. And what he kept emphasizing over and over was the inadequacy of state funding for higher education. The University of Oregon gets 5% of its revenue now from the state. So our question is, what difference would this healthcare mandate make?
Good question.
Fantastic, thank you. So again, this is Ryan. I actually have the temporary wording, so at least I can let you know exactly what is currently being proposed as the language for the amendment. So it reads, it is the obligation of the state to ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to effective, medically appropriate, and affordable health care as a fundamental right. To your question about funding, I worked for Representative Phil Barnhart. If you've ever heard him speak, he will let you know in no short terms that we are shorting our state in funding and that we need to find more revenue. So you are absolutely right that that currently we don't have enough revenue for our current services. And so would this add a little bit more? It would. And that's part of the conversation is making it so that we are moving forward in a positive way. I think one of the big things we need to do is make sure we're funding all of our services adequately and have more public buy-in that we need to create more revenue in the state, create more efficiencies, and make sure our schools are funded appropriately, especially higher education. We used to fund about 30% of our higher education, and you're actually right that we funded about 6%. So we're asking a lot more of our young people who are trying to better themselves and be productive members of our society. We're asking them to pay in more, and so this healthcare, it's a start of a conversation, is what a lot of people see it as, is a putting it in writing that this is a path forward we need to look at. There is a lot of different funding mechanisms we can look at that are specific to healthcare that could never be addressed for education funding, such as the federal matching program we currently take advantage of. And so making sure we're maximizing those dollars would be an avenue that's only for healthcare. So I think there are certain specifics that could be included in this conversation. And I imagine that if this does go to the ballot, that's going to be the big conversation about this is not only should we provide, but how do we get to that point? How do we find the funding mechanisms necessary to get to funding for all? Because it's not cheap. Like a lot of our services, that investments we say into the state is that we need this. We need healthcare. So that's a big conversation that could potentially come up. And I imagine that the point you address would be probably the biggest one in living rooms around the state is the bigger conversation of not only should we, but how do we do that. So I think Charlie has the point.
Okay.
So this is Charlie Swanson. So the Oregon Constitution has a number of things in it. Among the things in it is that they're essentially voters have to approve whatever new taxes, new revenue is produced in the state or goes to the state government. The Constitution also says we have to have a balanced budget. So there's going to be some competing concerns, and there are competing concerns already with education, as was pointed out. The legislature cannot provide more funds than it has, and it cannot just magically come up with new funds. As we learned with Measure 101, if they propose a new tax, if some voters don't like it, they can refer it to the ballot, and we can be sure that any new funding mechanism that will be sufficient to provide the universal access to care is going to go to the ballot. So it's going to require voters agreeing to that funding. Legislators not going to be able to do it alone. But if this is in the Constitution, there is going to be a pressure on the legislature to think about this. Every every session, just like they do now, every session there is a lot of pressure on them to appropriately fund education. They do the best they can with the revenue that's available. There are certainly a number of legislators who in the last session tried to put forth a proposal to provide enough funding so they could do this. It didn't actually get out of the legislature even, but if it would have been put to the voters. The voters would have had to, there would have been a referendum and it would have gone to the ballot and voters would have had to approve it. But that conversation occurs every year. The conversation about universal access to health care currently doesn't occur every year in the legislature. And if this were on the ballot, it probably would. And I think that's a step in the right direction. You know, as far as you know, this costs a lot, we should be aware that it actually will probably cost less, depending on the system we go to, it'll probably cost less to the state as a whole, that is, everybody within the state, if we actually had universal access to care. So the overall cost to everybody in the state would be less, but the cost to state government would probably be more, depending upon, again, how exactly it was implemented, how this universal access to care was implemented. So we have to be a little bit careful of this notion of cost. Is it cost to society or is it cost to state government that we're talking about? So,
thank you.
Ralph Pledger, member for about 2 years. My question is about dentistry or providing dental services. Through some connections I have, I've become aware that providing dental services to people who can't immediately pay for them is really quite a significant issue. And kind of a tangential part of that is that quite often when a person who can't pay for dental services, but in fact gets a dental service, that dental service will very likely be an extraction. So they'll lose a tooth, and this has consequences that are more significant than just the immediate problem of losing a tooth. It can quite often disadvantage them socially for their whole life. So my question is, are there any initiatives at the state level to provide better dental services for those that can't pay for them?
So dental care is absolutely one of the things that Oregonians have bought into. Part of the reason that we are so far along on providing health care, especially for low-income people and those missing middle folks, is that we've not only just bought into providing health care, but providing dental care, providing all those things, because there is long-term health consequences and benefits to providing health care. That, you know, a young kid can't go to school if they have a hurting tooth. You know, it's hard for us to go to work sometimes if you have a sore tooth. So I think we've already started that process of making that investment into dental care. We need to start working on building it into the conversation of healthcare, not as just going and seeing a general doctor, but going and seeing eye and teeth and all those other things as well. So. I think to even build upon that, there's more we can do that's not just healthcare, but vision and things like that as well, preventative healthcare, long-term preventative healthcare. Part of what the conversation of Measure 101, was this piece that we added in about providing healthcare. If we would have not passed Measure 101, that would have been one of the things that we would have been looking at to possibly have been removing from the health plans we do offer for more folks. So I think by taking the burden off of doctors to provide the charity health care, it allows them to reduce their costs and get more insurance companies to buy in to the health care program. So we've already made the initial steps. Thankfully, we don't have to look at cutting those programs. And now we can look at how do we build upon that success and how do we make it even better for folks that seeing the whole range of health care, not just the narrow view of a doctor in a white coat kind of thing.
Okay, thank you.
Ruth Zamler. I was surprised with the newspaper this morning that declared that our RG has sold, and it's sold to an organization that has over 160 daily newspapers and 600 small community newspapers and over 2 million contacts. I'm concerned about that because how do we get the word out when we're running a campaign when we have so much in the power of people with large sums of money? It seems that not only has our newspapers been taken over, but also our television. Sinclair is now, with the television, also taken over a lot of the word that gets out. And how do we plan to have a fair election for health care and have this media dominated by rather conservative outlets? Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is a question that's right in my wheelhouse. A lot of the time I work on campaigns and community outreach and community relations. And so the biggest thing that money is always going to fund things that are going to save the big money a lot more money. So the way we combat that is just having conversations door to door, neighbor to neighbor. That's what I do on a daily basis. I pick up the phone and make phone calls, and I go and knock on people's doors. So it's all about community investment and working together. With the rise of social media, we've seen that it's really easy to think that you've had the full conversation by seeing a Facebook post or a Twitter post. 140 characters is not a very great way of having a meaningful conversation about especially complex issues like healthcare. It takes sitting down and talking to people over a cup of coffee or talking to them at their door. So if there's an issue you're really passionate about and you see that big money is probably gonna be going to oppose that, I'd say get involved. Get involved in whatever local organization is working on this. Get involved in a democratic process. Get involved in elections. Get involved in talking to your legislator and advocating. It takes the effort. We can't just sit on the sidelines and let think that these things are going to, you know, if it makes sense to us, it's going to make sense to everybody else. And that's not the case. That we need to help and make sure that we're passing along the correct information and correcting some misinformation that goes along. It's really easy to get people stirred up over one small misclarification, and it takes a lot of effort to help correct those things and get people seeing things the way you do. So that's a great way of making sure you're involved in your community.
Great, thanks.
I'm Robin Fletcher, and I've been a member since 2004. And one of the questions, this is just a curiosity question, really, and it was great news that 95% of Oregonians are covered somewhat anyway, and 100% of kids. But who are those 5% that aren't, and why aren't they?
Absolutely. This is the next big question, right? How do we get to this 100%? A lot of these folks, so there's folks that are kind of in two big different categories. One is the folks that are largely transient, they're hard to locate, they've never really had access to services, so a lot of homeless folks. We do a pretty good job of getting them on health care, especially to help with addiction treatments and mental health treatment and help correct them. But there's a good number of folks that are kind of in that, the missing folks that have never had access to health care. So it's working with our low-income populations and homeless populations, especially the community groups that serve them, and see, you know, where are we missing? Where are the folks that really need a doc, really need someone to help with their health care coverage? So it's working with those folks. The next is to this missing middle that I was talking about that we're helping with is ensuring folks that are doing a good job, they're working full time, but maybe their work doesn't provide health care. And they maybe, we've gotten a good amount of them, but there's still a small portion that are above the amount we see as wanting to help them out. So that's the other big group of people, is those folks that are doing a good job, working hard, and just don't have access to health care. Seniors too. There's a lot of seniors that have not got signed up once they turn 65 and have access to programs like that.
That was Ryan.
So this is Charlie Swanson. The biggest group actually there's two of the biggest groups, I guess. One is those who have chosen who have income that's too great to qualify for Medicaid or the Oregon Health Plan, but they've chosen not to get coverage because the coverage that they would get is too expensive for what they get out of it. Their copays are so great that it's effectively not having coverage, and they've chosen not to. The other large group is undocumented adults. So those are really the two biggest groups. The other thing I should point out is that 100% coverage is really not what we're after. What we want is people to have access to care. And so a big part of the missing middle is not missing from having actual health insurance. There's a lot of the people that I would say are in the missing middle actually have health insurance, but their co-pays are so large that they can't get the health care they need, or they choose not to get the health care that they need until they absolutely need it. If they're going to die, they're going to pay their $6,000 out of pocket. But if they aren't sure that they're going to die, they don't get it, and then they find out when they go to the later that, oh, you know what, you probably are going to die because you didn't get the preventative care that you could have gotten. So that is probably the biggest part of what I would say is the missing middle, is those whose out-of-pocket expenses are too large to say they actually have realistic health insurance.
Thank you. Ryan, did you have
a
comment? So before we thank our speaker today, there are a couple of announcements. Thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. following the Friday programs. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, Cable Channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. Next week, on Friday, February 2nd, we'll not have a program. Our next program is February 9th, which is Winter Olympics, two Koreas under one flag. More details and information about future programs can be found on the City Club's website at cityclubofeugene.org. So now I'd like to thank both Charlie Swanson for helping us answer questions. So thank you, Charlie. And our speaker, Ryan Panowski. Thank you. And that concludes our program today.